Hello, listeners. This is Iris, and you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for today, Monday, April 15th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a quick look at the weather forecast. This comes from the National Weather Service. Today promises to be sunny with a high near 79 degrees, but it will be breezy with the wind from the southwest from 6 to 16 miles per hour. There will be gusts as high as 21 miles per hour today. And tonight, there will be a chance of showers before 11 p.m., then a chance of showers and thunderstorms between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m., then showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 a.m. The low will be around 57 degrees. It'll be windy, and a chance of precipitation is 80%. New rainfall amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch, except higher amounts possible during the thunderstorms. Again, tomorrow, you can expect showers and possibly a thunderstorm. The high will be 72. It'll be windy with a chance of precipitation at 100%. And tomorrow night, showers and possibly a thunderstorm, low around 52 degrees and windy. Again, the chance of precipitation is at 100%. Wednesday, it looks similar. Showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm before 8 a.m. Then there'll be a chance of showers between that time and 2 p.m. It'll be partly sunny with a high near 62. Windy with a chance of precipitation is set at 60%. It'll remain partly cloudy with a high around 41 degrees on Wednesday night, and it will be windy. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 55. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 34. And Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 52. And for the whole week, they're indicating windy weather. Now let's read the lead story on the front page of the Courier today. Cedar Heights Elementary librarian bookends students' school days. Story written by Holly Hudson Hill, and the dateline is Cedar Falls. Each morning before school, safety patrols at Cedar Heights Elementary School take their positions at the crosswalk on Hawthorne Drive. Cars begin to pull up and students trickle in. It is the calm before the storm of another school day. Soon, shouts of "Good morning" shatter the quiet. That's when you know Tiffany Ahrens has arrived. As she takes her post near the end of the sidewalk that leads to the back of the school, she immediately starts addressing students. Quote, "Are those new shoes?" she asks one student. "Is it your birthday?" she asks another. Quote, "Now watch this one," she said, referring to a young girl in the sidewalk. "As soon as she hits the sidewalk, she's going to take off. 3, 2, 1, and there she goes." Ahrens points to a boy. "We are having a battle of wills. He will not say good morning for love or money," she said, laughing. As usual, her cheery greeting is met with stony silence. Ahrens, who graduated from Carroll High School and came to this area to attend the University of Northern Iowa, became Cedar Heights teacher librarian in 2006. 2 years later, her duties grew to include overseeing the students' comings and goings. Quote, "It was an assignment from my administrator," she said. "It's twice a day, before and after school, mostly for student safety. The counselor who used to do it retired, and they wanted somebody out there, a familiar face, and I really started to enjoy it." Ahrens has endured some extreme weather, ranging from polar vortexes to days with heat index of 120 degrees. Quote, "The hot days are when I almost reach my breaking point," she said. "You can always layer up on the cold days, but you can only take so much off," unquote. It was one of those extreme weather days that started Ahrens's habit of carrying a board with a quote on it each morning. Quote, "It very much started off as a joke," Ahrens said. Quote, "I feel like April and May are my rewards for making it through the winter," unquote. Ahrens showed her displeasure at a heavy snowfall in April of 2018. Quote, "I got some cardstock and made a sign that said, 'Librarian on strike to protest the terrible weather,'" she said. It evolved from there into something people look forward to. It's a way to give a little bit of encouragement to our families, unquote. Recently, a quote by Amanda Gorman graced the board, quote, "There is always a light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it," unquote. Aaron's efforts don't go unnoticed. Tammy Bird became familiar with Aaron's while dropping off her grandson for school. She wrote a letter to the Courier singing Aaron's praises. Quote, "She stations herself at the back entrance of the school, waiting to give each individual child a warm welcome with a huge smile and shout out," Bird wrote. Quote, "In spite of every kind of weather, you can count on her to announce your arrival." Next, we have sheriff candidate convicted of eluding. Nihad Mazik said he didn't know sirens were for him. Jeff Reinitz wrote this story, and the dateline is Waterloo. A Waterloo man who wants to be the next Black Hawk County sheriff told police officers he didn't pull over for a squad car because he didn't know authorities were trying to stop him. He also told officers to F off. Nihad Mazik, 34, an automobile dealer who was one of two people vying to be the Democratic candidate for Black Hawk County Sheriff, was arrested for misdemeanor eluding in connection with a November 8, 2022 traffic stop for a missing license plate. On Wednesday, a jury found him guilty. The charge carries up to a year in prison, and sentencing will be at a later date. Mazik declined to comment following the verdict. Defense attorney Lucas Jensen said that Mazik wasn't trying to elude police. He said that the time the squad car's lights and sirens were on, Mazik's Toyota Corolla simply went to the end of the block, turned a corner onto a lesser-traveled street, and parked in the driveway of his home. He estimated the distance to be around 500 feet. Quote, "Is that criminal behavior? We're talking 14 to 15 seconds, Jensen told jurors during closing arguments. Jensen also noted that the squad car sirens were initiated while Mazik was driving past a fire station driveway, and he questioned the wisdom of pulling over and blocking the station. Prosecutor Ryan Tang said there was more to it. He noted that Officer Alex Snyder had actually turned on his flashing lights earlier, albeit without the audible siren, so Mazik had ample knowledge police were behind him and wanted him to stop. Under Iowa law, a squad car's flashing lights and sirens have to be activated before a person can be charged with eluding. Not pulling over for flashing lights alone is covered by a separate offense of failure to yield for an emergency vehicle, which wasn't charged in Mazik's case. According to testimony at trial, the Corolla was traveling south on Ansboro Avenue shortly after midnight, and the vehicle changed lanes multiple times after Snyder turned on his flashing lights. Each time the squad car changed lanes to get behind Corolla, the Corolla switched back to the other lane. The officer added his siren as they crossed University Avenue, and Mazik drove about a block to Downing Avenue, where he turned and parked. For the next several minutes, Mazik refused police orders to exit his vehicle and instead questioned why the officer was trying to stop him in the first place. Other officers pulled up, including a police canine that began barking. Quote, "He's continuing to argue with the officers and not following the officers' instructions," Tang said. He said the delay heightened tensions and noted that traffic stops are one of the more dangerous parts of police work. Mazik eventually stepped out of the Corolla and told police that he didn't see the flashing lights at first and was changing lanes to let the squad car go past him. Quote, "I was trying to get out of your way. I figured you were going somewhere," Mazik can be heard saying on a body cam video. When Sergeant Jordan Ellers interjected, telling Mazik that he should have stopped to see what Snyder wanted, Mazik responded, "Go away, F you, bro." Another officer asked Mazik why he was so angry. Quote, "Is there a law against anger?" Mazik answered. Mazik is also facing a misdemeanor interference charge for not immediately exiting his vehicle in connection with the incident. A trial is set for May for charges of harassment of a public employee for allegedly giving police a fake name when he was stopped for riding a bicycle at night without a headlight in September. Another May trial is scheduled for an October incident where he allegedly threw a pen after he failed to sign a speeding ticket in Evansdale and then struggled with officers at the jail and allegedly kicked a correctional officer several times, according to court records. Mazik is also charged with misdemeanor assault for allegedly twisting a convenience store employee's wrist during an argument in October. Waterloo man jailed on drug charges after chase. Jeff Reinitz wrote this story. Dateline Waterloo. A Waterloo man has been arrested after he allegedly led police on a high-speed chase early Friday morning. Authorities allege they found more than 5 grams of black tar heroin, as well as other drugs, when they finally detained 33-year-old Jack Lee Dangle. Dangle, formerly of Hamilton and Iowa Falls, was arrested for possession of marijuana and heroin with intent to deliver, eluding, possession of K2 with intent to deliver, possession of clonazepam with intent to deliver, and possession of prescription drugs. Bond was set at $50,000. According to court records, a Waterloo patrol officer attempted to stop Dangle's Buick LaCrosse in the area of West 7th Street and Grant Avenue for a traffic violation around 12:45 a.m. The chase crossed the Cedar River and came to an end when the Buick lost control at the intersection of Sycamore and Lake Streets. Dangle then ran on foot before he was detained at Lake and Rath Streets. Officers found a backpack Dangle tossed over a fence on Rath Street during the foot chase. The backpack contained heroin, K2 synthetic marijuana, 3 bags of marijuana, a small bag of meth, and a digital scale. Police also found a balloon with more heroin in Dangle's pocket, records state. Dangle is also awaiting trial for a November 29th incident where he allegedly pointed a gun at his girlfriend and her dog in Montrose, Iowa. When officers attempted to arrest him, he led them on a pursuit and authorities found a loaded pistol along the chase route, according to court records. Arrest made after threats place school on lockdown. Story by Jeff Reinitz. Winthrop. An Independence man has been arrested after allegedly making threats that triggered a school lockdown on Thursday. According to the Buchanan County Sheriff's Office, a person who was upset with the East Buchanan Community School District administration made threatening comments to a school official around 9:45 a.m. Quote, those comments were specifically directed at that particular school administrator and did not involve any other staff or students, according to a statement released by the sheriff's office. Court records indicate James Michael Toms, 28, was upset with Superintendent Daniel Fox because of a student matter and because he wanted his diploma from when he was a student. He allegedly told the superintendent he was, quote, coming to get him, records state. The school was placed on lockdown. Toms never went to the school, and deputies found him at a home on 6th Street Northeast, where he was detained. The lockdown was lifted at 10:30 a.m. Deputies arrested Toms on 1 count of misdemeanor harassment. Court records allege Toms has threatened to hurt Fox several times in the past. Body of missing teen found outside Vinton. Crash apparently killed Xander McClintock, 18. Story written by Jeff Reinitz. Dateline is Vinton. Authorities have found the body of a teen who was reported missing in Benton County last week. Xander McClintock, 18, had been reported missing on April 2nd after he disappeared while traveling to Van Horn in a black Chevrolet Cavalier. He was last seen around 11:30 p.m. on March 31st near U.S. Highway 151 and Highway 13 in Marion. On Tuesday, Benton County Sheriff's deputies found the vehicle about 5 miles south of Vinton, and they discovered human remains at the scene. Authorities said the death appears to be the result of an automobile accident, and no foul play is suspected. The incident remains under investigation. The investigation is being conducted by the Benton County Sheriff's Office, State Fire Marshal, and the Iowa State Medical Examiner. Lawmakers okay rules for labeling meat substitutes. Bill bars Iowans on food aid from buying egg alternatives. Story written by Aaron Murphy of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau. Dateline, Des Moines. It started as legislation designed to ensure Iowa consumers are aware when a product at the grocery store is a meat substitute and not the real thing, and wound up barring low-income Iowans from using food assistance benefits to purchase egg alternatives. State lawmakers approved the proposal Wednesday, sending it to our Governor Kim Reynolds' desk to consider signing into law. The proposed legislation would require meat substitute products like vegetable and plant-based burgers to feature prominent labeling that makes clear the product is not meat. It would also prohibit lab-grown products from being used in school lunches. When the bill was taken up earlier this week in the Iowa House, Republicans there amended it to also say that Iowans enrolled in food assistance programs like SNAP for low-income individuals and WIC or WIC for low-income mothers, those people cannot use benefits to purchase egg substitute products. But because those programs are jointly funded and operated with the federal government, such a prohibition would require Iowa to apply for a waiver to enforce such a policy. During debate Wednesday in the Iowa Senate, the prohibition on using food assistance benefits to purchase egg substitutes was lamented even by the Senate Republican who managed the bill. Quote, "When it was originally discussed earlier this session in this chamber, the intent of this bill was clear," Senator Don Driscoll, a Republican from Williamsburg, said during the debate. Quote, "We focused on the meat, and we voted for the transparent labeling for the consumers, and to keep experimental lab-grown protein out of schools in the nutrition programs. Quote, "We gave a great bill to the House, and now they have famously applied their special seasoning to this bill," Driscoll said. Multiple Senate Democrats said they supported the bill as originally written and argued the amended version would create problems for low-income Iowans with egg allergies. Quote, "I was very pleased to vote for the original version of this bill. Truth in labeling is certainly something that I strongly believe in for consumer protection," Senator Herman Quambach, a Democrat from Ames, said during debate. Quote, "But I'm also concerned with consumer nutrition, and there are some people who can't eat eggs because of allergies, but who still need the nutritive content that might be supplied by alternative products." Quote, "So families on limited budgets, families in particular who are participants in either the WIC or the SNAP program, the food subsidization programs, are going to be hit particularly hard," Quambach said. Quote, "They have an extremely limited budget. This amendment seeks to disqualify those people from being able to purchase the egg substitutes that might be able to provide required nutrition to their families. That is unconscionable," unquote. The bill would allow the State Department of Inspections, Appeals, and Licensing to create rules and impose civil penalties on food manufacturing plants that mislabel non-meat products. State House Republicans said the bill would promote transparency in food production and help promote Iowa's beef and agriculture industry. The bill, Senate File 2391, passed the Senate on a 33-12 vote, with one Democrat joining all Republicans in favor. It passed the House on a similarly partisan 60-34 vote on April 3rd. The bill now goes to Reynolds for her consideration. Panther West plat advanced by Cedar Falls panel. 54-acre development heads to City Council for final consideration. Story written by Andy Malone, and the dateline is Cedar Falls. And it opens with a photograph showing a view of land north of Aldrich Elementary School, and it is the proposed site for new housing in the 54-acre Panther West plat in Cedar Falls. And we see buildings in the distant background, and in the foreground, we have a vacant crop field. And here's the text of the article. The 54-acre Panther West plat, the largest proposed in some time, was advanced Wednesday by the Planning and Zoning Commission on an 8-0 vote. Before offering her blessing, though, Oksana Grybovich Hofferman wanted to check on its planned housing density. City planner J.D. Attildaria told the commissioner that the plat came in at 2.4 units per acre. That is reportedly similar to other nearby neighborhoods with single-family households and significantly less than the controversial proposal of another developer. The developer wants to subdivide the land north of Bess Streeter Aldridge Elementary School at 2526 Ashworth Drive and south of Green Hill Road into lots for 130 single-family homes. Commissioner Alan Stalnicker was absent for the vote on the plat, which first came before the panel for discussion last month. It now goes to the City Council. The Council could take up the matter as soon as May 6th and previously gave its approval on a rezoning to accommodate the plans there. The project on the west end of town is being proposed by Panther Builders, a firm associated with real estate mogul Brent Dahlstrom. At the request of Grybovich, the planner also compared the plat to the final edition of Autumn Ridge, which garnered significant concern from neighbors last year. In that case, the commission did not approve a necessary plan amendment. It is also on the west side of Cedar Falls, but further north. Autumn Ridge was calculated to be 3.8 units per acre off the corner of First Street and Union Road, according to a city report. That was deemed by commissioners to be a significant uptick from developer BNKD's previous proposal in 2013 for the approximately 22 acres. Quote, low-density residential does not exceed 4 units per acre, the report said. The planning department and Kevin Fitro, president of Panther Builders, assured commissioners that the density figure of approximately 2 units per acre is typical for single-family neighborhoods. Quote, one reason we went through the rezoning was to keep this similar to what the neighborhoods already were near the school, said Fitro. Officials and the developer also reported that stormwater management queries from neighbors have been addressed privately. Quote, as you can tell, nobody's here to comment on it, said Fitro. The plant establishes what's necessary for stormwater management and other parameters like building setbacks. What had been of significant interest in the past is the long-awaited future roads to come with the housing. They're expected to support the traffic around the school and make the area safer. Fitro previously told the Courier that the roads could be built as soon as this summer. Those include an Arbors Drive extension northward to Green Hill Road, in addition to other minor connections like Richard Drive westward and Ironwood Drive northward to the new Arbors Drive section. 50% of the cost will be covered by the city. The first of four phases of homes may get under construction the following spring. Hofferman inquired about the future park to be established in the city-owned area immediately southwest of the developer's property. Attoria also brought up other supporting infrastructure, including the addition and extension of a sidewalk and trail on the east side of the planned Arbors Drive and to the north of the property boundary. Quote, there are plenty of opportunities here for people to have the additional connection for biking or walking to school, and all these routes and additional areas will also be helpful for the future city park that may come soon to the south of this proposed development, said Atadoria. Deary rezoning. Another matter Wednesday, the commission voted 8-0 to grant Deary family a positive recommendation on its rezoning request. The focus is the 55,000 square foot one-story building undergoing work on the 3.8 acres at 2300 Main Street, formerly the home to Simpson Furniture and Art Van Furniture. On May 6th, the council could take up scheduling the first of three readings for the proposed ordinance, changing the zoning from M1 Light Industrial to C2 Retail Commercial District to allow for several different uses, including human care, like dentist's office. Spencer Walker is looking to open a 3,600-square-foot dental clinic there by the end of October. Chris Fischels, representing the Deary's and its subsidiary 7D LLC, told the Courier. He said another 10,400 square feet is available for lease. City meeting documents show some of the space will also be used for private pickleball courts and storage. Later in the fall, the rest of the facility is expected to become the Deary's Vehicle Detailing Center. The zoning designation does not allow for more intensive industrial uses like automobile bodywork. The building's footprint has been 65,000 square feet, but a two-story partition has been removed, Fischel said. Family businesses like Dan Deary Toyota and Deary Brothers Collision Center are already located along that strip of Main Street, north of University Avenue, and south of the new roundabout being constructed at the Searley Boulevard intersection. Three commissioners voiced their excitement about the repurposing of the space. Quote, "I think I heard quite a few comments throughout the last year or so about what's going to happen with the space. So it's really nice that we're able to repurpose it into something for the neighborhood and community," said Commissioner Sloan Alberhasky. Taxes rise nearly 9% under Cedar Falls' budget proposal, the council to consider approving on Monday. This story was written by Andy Malone, and the dateline is Cedar Falls. The City Council will consider adoption Monday of its fiscal year 2025 budget, supported by $25.84 million in property taxes, an 8.66% increase from the current year. The 7 p.m. meeting at City Hall at 220 Clay Street follows substantial discussion earlier this month, ending with the council proposing two minor amendments that slightly lower the impact on the taxpayer. The finance department says the increase in overall tax collections from the current year, set at $23.78 million, is because of regular salary increases and health insurance. Personnel costs are the bulk of the operating expenditures. Additionally, the budget would support new positions like a second school resource officer and capital projects like the construction of a roundabout at the Prairie Parkway and Viking Road intersection. The property tax rate is proposed at $11.86 per $1,000 of taxable valuation versus the $11.40 in this year's budget. After factoring in an average increase in property valuations of 20% and an 8.31% drop in the state's residential rollback, or how much the property's value can be taxed, the city estimates a homeowner's city tax will rise approximately 5.86%. The budget totals $114.66 million in expenses from July 1, 2024 through June 30 of 2025. The council will convene in committee at 6:20 p.m. to discuss possibly moving its regular meetings to Tuesdays, a proposal put forth by Councilmember Darrell Cruz, with a majority supportive of the discussion. Right now, Meetings are the first and third Mondays each month. In other business, the council may vote at its 7 p.m. meeting to approve the following: plans for work on a parking lot and a new asphalt pad supporting 8 future pickleball courts off McLean Drive at Orchard Hill Park. That would be double what is there currently. Work is estimated at $489.47 million. And also, an ordinance on the first of three readings to increase the compensation of the 5 members of the Cedar Falls Utility Board of Trustees from $200 to $275 per month. They'll also vote on a resolution asking the state and its finance authority to recognize a future local housing trust fund being established by the city through a new nonprofit. That new entity will have its own board and tap into funds from the state's own housing trust for projects in the city. And the council will vote on a 5-year property tax exemption for DBD investments on 100% of the new value added through improvements to 2007 College Street. And lastly, the council will vote on an application on behalf of LaForge, a machining fabrication crane company, to the Iowa Economic Development Authority's High Quality Jobs Program for $124,750 in company financing and tax credits. The assistance will help cover a $2.4 million project comprised of building renovations, new machinery, equipment, and parking lot paving at 1824 Lincoln Street. The city would provide a match of $4,625 in partial tax abatements over 5 years. And now, listeners, we just take a moment to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, April 15th on IRIS, that's I-R-I-S, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and the Print Handicapped. Now, we have this message.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Now let's return to Iowa and local news from the Courier. This begins on the Cedar Valley page, and the first article is titled, Iowa Justices Mull Abortion Ban. The Supreme Court is being urged to let the fetal heartbeat measure go into effect. Caleb McCullough of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau wrote this story, which begins with a color photograph of abortion rights activists and abortion opponents as they clash during a special session of the Iowa State Capitol on July 12th of 2023. Republican lawmakers passed a bill banning abortion once cardiac activity is detected in a fetus. And we see lots of handmade signs supporting both sides of the question. Dateline Des Moines. Lawyers for Governor Kim Reynolds argued on Thursday that the state Supreme Court should allow a fetal heartbeat abortion ban to take effect, while opponents fought to keep the measure blocked in court. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments over the law, which a district court blocked last year, shortly after Reynolds signed it following a special legislative session to enact the restriction. The arguments are the latest in a long legal battle over abortion restrictions in the state. The law would ban abortion once cardiac activity can be detected in a fetus, which can be as early as 6 weeks. The justices questioned lawyers for the state and Planned Parenthood on Thursday, largely focusing on which legal standard should be applied to the law. Since Iowa's Supreme Court no longer recognizes a fundamental right to abortion in the state constitution, Iowa Solicitor General Eric Wesson argued the lower-level, quote, rational basis standard should be applied and the law should take effect. He argued the undue burden standard imposed by federal law before Roe v. Wade was overturned should no longer apply. Quote, "This court has never before recognized a quasi-fundamental or a fundamentalish right," he said. "It's a binary choice." A similar law was passed and signed in 2018, but a district court found it unconstitutional under a previous state court decision, which declared a fundamental right to an abortion existed in the state constitution. The Iowa Supreme Court in 2022 reversed that standard, but stated that Iowa was bound by the undue burden standard then imposed by federal precedent that guaranteed a right to an abortion. The U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade days later, removing the federal standard and overturning the 50-year-old federal right to abortion. Then, in 2023, Reynolds unsuccessfully asked the Iowa Supreme Court to revive the 2018 law. The court did not approve that request, prompting Republican lawmakers to pass a nearly identical law that summer. A district court blocked that law shortly after, saying that it violated the standard set out in the court's 2022 opinion. Peter M., the lawyer for Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers, said the district court was correct in its decision and the law should remain blocked. The law's opponents argued it violates several areas of the state constitution, including due process and a guarantee of equal rights for women. Quote, "There is no document that says that this court should defer to the legislature when the legislature passes a law that rides roughshod over the rights of Iowans to exercise bodily autonomy," M. said. Planned Parenthood is asking the Supreme Court to send the case back to the district court, where they hope to develop their arguments further. Unborn's Day in Court. Reynolds, a Republican, said in a statement Thursday, the overturning of Roe v. Wade gave states the right to decide how to limit abortion. Quote, "For Iowa, the people's elected representatives have drawn a clear line multiple times at when a heartbeat begins," Reynolds said. "Today, the unborn had their day at the Iowa Supreme Court. As a pro-life governor, I will do everything I can to protect the innocent unborn and promote strong, healthy families," unquote. Republican Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd, who was in the courtroom for oral arguments Thursday, said in a statement she would continue to defend the state law and she was confident it would be found constitutional. Quote, "No right is more sacred than the right to life. Today, my office made our case in the Iowa Supreme Court to defend Iowa's heartbeat law, which protects unborn life and prioritizes mother's health," Byrd said. Lawmakers weigh in. State Senator Janice Wiener, a Democrat from Iowa City, said the arguments presented by Planned Parenthood were convincing and called the law an unconstitutional attempt, quote, "to control the bodies of Iowans and their futures," unquote. "Iowans value their freedom, and that includes the freedom to make decisions about their bodies and their health care with their doctors. A majority of Iowans oppose attacks on their health care choices," Wiener said in a statement. House Speaker Pat Grassley, a Republican from New Hartford, told reporters Thursday that Republicans are confident in the legislation and hopeful that it will survive the legal challenge. Quote, "It was something that we were willing to even come in for a special session. We felt so strongly about it," he said. "So we're obviously hopeful that they would uphold it, but I'm not going to make any predictions on whether they would uphold it or not," unquote. Exceptions questioned. In the 2023 decision that upheld the injunction of the 2018 law, Iowa's 7-member Supreme Court was split 3-3 between justices who favored keeping the injunction and those who favored lifting it. Justice Dana Oxley recused herself, but she has not recused herself from the current case. Some justices expressed skepticism about parts of the state's argument Thursday, but others showed a willingness to uphold the law. Reynolds appointed 5 of the court's justices, while 2 were appointed by former Republican Governor Terry Branstad. Chief Justice Susan Christensen questioned the rationale of the exceptions allowed under the heartbeat bill, suggesting they may not survive legal scrutiny. The law allows an exception to the restriction for cases of rape that are reported within 45 days and incest that is reported within 140 days, as well as exceptions when the life of the mother is threatened. She said the time limit imposed is too narrow to feasibly allow those cases to be reported. Quote, "Isn't that kind of more or less shutting the door on all rapes and incest? Because I think that anyone who's prosecuted or been a part of that world knows that those numbers are very unrealistic for actually being reported," she said. Wesson said the law only requires that the woman seeking an abortion report the rape or incest to her doctor and not to a law enforcement agency, calling the policy not unreasonable. There is no set date for the court to decide the case, but most cases are decided by the end of the court's term. This year's term ends on June 28th. Hy-Vee presents $139,000 check to Northeast Iowa Food Bank from Roundup campaign. The story written by Maria Cooper, Dateline Cedar Falls. The Northeast Iowa Food Bank will be able to provide nearly 600,000 more meals to the community after a donation from Hy-Vee. The grocery store donated $139,263 to the nonprofit on Friday. The money came from funds collected from Register Roundup campaigns in the Cedar Valley area Hy-Vee stores and Fast and Fresh locations. This comes from a partnership with Feeding America and food banks for a 100 million meals challenge. In addition to customer donations, Hy-Vee worked with national food manufacturers and suppliers to provide funds to benefit the 18 Feeding America partner food banks in its 8-state region. For every $1 donated, Feeding America can provide at least 10 meals from local member food banks. Barb Panther, executive director of the food bank, said she's grateful Hy-Vee participated in the event. Quote, "We exist because the community needs the help, because people are food insecure," she said. "To see a company do this to this magnitude and not just help the Northeast Iowa Food Bank, but have helped many food banks through the Hy-Vee footprint, it just really makes a difference." She said the dollar amount equates to providing 560,000 meals. The money will go toward buying food, distribution, and transportation, and program operations. From July 1, 2022 to June 30, 2023, the food bank served 7.3 million meals. The Cedar Valley Food Pantry, located in Waterloo, served 4,000 people monthly. Ryan Parker, the district director for the Cedar Falls and Waverly Hy-Vee locations, said presenting the giant check was a great day for him. And here we have a photograph of that giant check, giant both literally and figuratively, being presented by the Hy-Vee employees to the Northeast Iowa Food Bank. Quote, "We definitely want to support the community that supports our stores," he said. He noted that when customers round up their grocery bill to the nearest dollar, it may not seem like a lot, but it all adds up and results in a large donation for the food bank. The program has been going on for a year. Panther said other area businesses, such as Walmart, Casey's, and Quickstar, participate in monthly roundup campaigns, but the Hy-Vee initiative was the first year-long effort. Rath Building eyed for senior housing. Council discusses sale of Rath Administration Building for $1 on Monday. Maria Cooper wrote this story, which begins with a photograph of Waterloo's Rath Packing Company Administration Building, and it's a very large, kind of nondescript, 2-story brick building. Dateline Waterloo. A former Rath Packing Company building could be sold and renovated into senior housing. The City Council will hold a public hearing on Monday regarding the sale of the former Rath Administration Building at 1515 Sycamore Street for $1. The council meets at 5:30 p.m. in City Hall. Gerhardt Moore Holdings, LLC, is hoping to convert the vacant building into at least 70 affordable residential units for seniors. The building has been empty for 39 years since Rath closed down. The company would receive a $5,000 infill housing incentive per unit. The property would have a minimum assessed value of $1.3 million and receive a grant payment for each six-month property tax installment over 15 years. Because the building is in the Rath Tax Increment Financing District, the developer has found the building is still structurally sound and plans to apply for state and federal historic tax credits, plus a $1.5 million Brownfield-Grayfield grant through the state. The second public hearing will be held for the approval of the fiscal year 2025 budget. The city is proposing a tax rate of $22.09 per $1,000 of taxable value. That is an increase of $2.36, or nearly 12%. The council will also consider approving the following: the sale and conveyance of nearly 94 acres located east of 4342 Ansborough Avenue for $1 with PWM Companies, LLC, for the construction of commercial buildings, and also vote on a development agreement with Short Enterprises, LLC, and Daniel Williams to construct two mini-storage buildings near 1250 West Airline Highway with a minimum assessed value of $525,570 and property tax rebates of 50% for 5 years. Waverly Shellrock okays 8% property tax increase. The story by Maria Cooper, Dateline Waverly. The Waverly Shellrock Community School District's property tax collections will increase more than 8% after the 2024-25 budget was approved Monday by the Board of Education. Documents show the district will collect $11.37 million in property and utility replacement excise taxes for the fiscal year starting July 1st. That is an increase of $886,085, or 8.45% from the last fiscal year. The income surtax will also increase by $133,000, or 13.39%. A surtax shifts some tax collections from property to income taxpayers. The tax rate per $1,000 of taxable value is set at $13.27, an increase of 70 cents. Mike Kalvig, the district's business manager, said the main reason for the increase is the rising cost of the district's property and casualty insurance. He said many school districts are seeing the same issue because insurance carriers are raising rates due to more extreme weather events. Quote, accompany the natural disasters with inflation and the cost of building materials, it has risen significantly over the last few years, he said. There's not much we can do. We need the insurance, unquote. The higher property taxes will also help fund growing expenditures in the district's general fund, he said. The maximum expenditures for fiscal year 2025 are $46.8 million, while total revenues are $40.4 million. As for the proposed property taxes based on residential and commercial properties with an assessed value at $100,000, property owners could pay less. Annual taxes on properties with an estimated value of $100,000 are currently $687. They would be $615 for the coming fiscal year, or a 10.5% decrease. However, new assessment values are not calculated into that equation. Along with property taxes, the district will receive other local revenues as well as funding from state and federal sources. An estimated $5.9 million will come from tuition, transportation, earnings on investment, nutrition program sales, student activities, and other local revenues. State sources are estimated at $20.5 million, and federal funds are estimated at $1.5 million. The budget includes expenses of $24.3 million for instruction, $3.7 million for total support services, $1.6 million for non-instructional programs, and $10.3 million for other expenditures. Those include costs such as facilities acquisition and construction, debt service, and area education agency support. In other business, the school board set the tentative last day of school as May 29th. Turning the page now, we are in the Week in Iowa section, and we begin with the In the News column, Traffic Camera Regulations Pass. After years of disagreement over how much to regulate traffic enforcement cameras in Iowa, House lawmakers passed a bill this week requiring cities to receive state approval before installing speed and red light cameras. The bill must pass the Senate before being eligible to be signed into law by Governor Kim Reynolds. Pipeline eminent domain rules advance. Iowa Senate lawmakers advanced a bill regulating eminent domain proceedings for carbon capture pipelines out of a subcommittee on Friday, marking the first time a pipeline regulation has advanced in the chamber. Opponents have argued that eminent domain should not be used for the private projects. Now under the heading of Odds and Ends, Judicial Nominating Rules, a proposal to give the Iowa governor more power over district judge appointments is moving forward in the Iowa Senate, but a key House Republican called the policy a non-starter. The proposal would remove the most senior judge in the district from the Judicial Nominating Commission and allow the governor to appoint an additional member. Iowa retires number 22. The University of Iowa will retire the number 22 jersey in honor of Caitlin Clark, Athletics Director Beth Gotts announced. The honor marks the end of Clark's college career weeks before she enters the WNBA draft after smashing several college basketball records. Clark led the Hawkeyes to the NCAA championship game last week, where they lost to South Carolina 75-87. Now here's the water cooler column. Dubuque homicide. Three people are dead in an apparent domestic abuse situation in Iowa and Wisconsin, authorities said. Alexander Grunke of Middletown, Wisconsin, was identified as a shooter and killed himself after an armed standoff with law enforcement. A 13-year-old girl and a 32-year-old Dubuque County woman were also killed in the incident. Arming school staff. The Iowa Senate passed a bill that would create a permitting process for trained staff in Iowa schools to carry firearms. Republicans said the measure would increase school safety and allow quick response to active shooters, while Democrats argued it would make students less safe. Next, Reynolds announces summer food. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds announced a $900,000 competitive grant program to address child food insecurity this week after turning down $29 million in federal support for the summer EBT program. The program will direct federal pandemic relief funds to create additional summer meal sites in underserved areas in the state. Critics said the program comes short of meeting the need and is well below the millions in funding available from the federal government. In fact, it amounts to about 3% of the size of the federal money. They said the program will not address barriers to families seeking out food assistance programs, like a lack of transportation to meal sites. Internet subsidy program at risk. Tens of thousands of Iowa families are likely to lose a $30 a month subsidy for home internet as a federal program is set to run out of funding by the end of April. The Affordable Connectivity Program provided the subsidy to low-income families, and broadband advocates worry at the end of the program could lead to some Iowans losing internet access. Illegal immigration a state crime. Iowa has joined Texas in making illegal immigration a state crime after Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed a bill into law criminalizing, quote, illegal reentry, unquote. The bill would allow state law enforcement to arrest and judges to order the removal of immigrants who entered the country illegally after previously being denied entry or being deported. Bill to arm school staff returned to Iowa House. Des Moines. A bill that would allow trained school staff to carry firearms on school grounds is headed back to the Iowa House. Senate Republican lawmakers on Wednesday amended a House bill that would create a new permitting process for Iowa school districts to arm trained staff. School districts would not be required to arm staff. Rather, the bill provides requirements for those districts that choose to do so. The measure also provides qualified immunity to school districts and school employees from criminal or civil liability for all, quote, damages incurred pursuant to the application of reasonable force, unquote. Approved staff would be allowed to carry concealed weapons during school hours. And now, friends, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, April 15th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can listen to a recording of this reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around Iowa that we read. Just visit our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.